Hello, and welcome to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, May the 20th, 2020. I am your reader, Ralph Skippers. In looking at today's front page, the headlines are Board Weighs Pandemic Message, Iowa Fish Cause Asian Invasion, and we'll start off with Iowa Begins to Release Serology Test Results. The test to identify COVID-19 antibodies can help determine how infected a certain community or population is, doctor says, by Jeff Montgomery. The state of Iowa this week started sharing results of another kind of testing that shows if people have had COVID-19. Serology tests are being used to identify the presence of COVID-19 antibodies in people who had the coronavirus but were not diagnosed as such. Dr. Bobby Conneru, a local oncologist serving as Dubuque County's medical liaison during the pandemic, said such tests could provide valuable insight. These tests could be used on an epidemiological basis to determine how infected a certain community or population is, he told the Telegraph Herald. It could give us information about how much it has infiltrated and what the actual fatality rate is. Testing. There essentially are two kinds of tests pertaining to COVID-19, a diagnostic test and a serology test. The diagnostic tests lead to the confirmed COVID-19 cases that have been reported on a daily basis at the local, state, national, and international levels. In Iowa, more than 15,300 people have been confirmed to have the coronavirus via these tests. That included 288 cases in Dubuque County as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, an increase of 12 cases over Monday night. Iowa Department of Public Health spokeswoman Amy McCoy said people found to have had COVID-19 via serology tests are not included in the confirmed case figures. That means more positive serology tests, which always involve recovered patients, effectively would reduce the fatality rate. These antibody tests have produced 1,683 positive results statewide and 35 in Dubuque County as of 6 p.m. Tuesday, according to state data. There have been 17 positive cases in Clayton County and 3 in Jackson County, while there was no available data in Jones or Delaware counties. Conneru said the absence of positives in smaller counties could be a reflection of testing availability, noting that antibody testing for COVID-19 only has been available for a few weeks. It is fairly new and just coming in the major hospitals, and that could be the reason, he said. Tests are more readily available in bigger health systems first. Imperfect information. Conneru explained that serology tests are being conducted at the 8 Test Iowa sites scattered across the state. He says such tests also can be conducted at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center and Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital in Dubuque, although he cautioned that such tests generally require a physician's order. Tests generally cost about $30 and are not covered by insurance. Mary Rose Corrigan, public health specialist for the city of Dubuque, sees potential large-scale value in such results. It can be a tool to help us understand COVID-19 activity, the patterns of where it's been, and the pockets that have not yet been exposed to the virus, she said. Some experts, however, are reluctant to embrace the testing. Antibodies often signal immunity, but in the case of COVID-19, that isn't proven. The reason we aren't being more aggressive with this testing now is we don't know for sure if somebody with antibodies will be immune to COVID-19 or how long they will be immune, said Conneru. Jeff Kindray, director of Grant County, Wisconsin Health Department, said he believes that uncertainty about immunity means that the value of such tests is somewhat limited. This has slowed the rollout of serology testing in Wisconsin. In rare cases, someone with antibodies can donate plasma to someone that is severely ill with COVID-19. It is generally used in cases when someone is extremely ill and they are using it as an experimental treatment option, Kendra said. The Illinois Department of Public Health did not respond to a request for comment from the Telegraph Herald. Added protection? During a Tuesday press conference, Iowa Medical Director and Epidemiologist Caitlin Pedotti explained the difference between diagnostic and serology testing. The former, which involves a swab in the nose, searches for tiny pieces of genetic material that indicate somebody is infected with the virus currently. Serology tests, on the other hand, are conducted by taking a blood sample and searching for proteins known as antibodies. As of 6 p.m. Tuesday, state data indicated that 517 people have received serology tests in Dubuque County, meaning 7% had tested positive. In Clayton County, 20% of the 86 tests came back positive, and in Jackson County, about 6% of the 53 tests were positive. Conaroo said many of those tested have been frontline healthcare workers or other essential personnel who have faced significant exposure to the virus in recent months. Diane Pape Freiberger, who serves on the Dubuque County Board of Health and is a registered nurse, said such tests also might be beneficial to those who are preparing for exposure to a large portion of the population in the weeks and months ahead. Employees in restaurants or retail settings, for instance, could benefit from learning about their possible immunity. If you have immunity, it gives you some protection, Pape Freiberger said. If you are not immune, you may want to increase your mitigation strategies. Next from the front page, Boardway's pandemic message. Dubuque County supervisors discuss how to emphasize social distancing as Iowa's governor is reopening state. By Benjamin Fisher. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors and Board of Health struggled Monday to configure their public health message regarding COVID-19, given Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' decision to reopen the state. Previously, the supervisors stuck to firm messaging of public health risks and use of self-quarantine and social distancing due to the pandemic, fronted by Supervisor Dave Baker's often repeated sentiment, quote, "You're not stuck at home. You're safe at home," end quote. But on May 13th, Reynolds announced that she would allow most businesses statewide to reopen, though with some public health measures still in place. This led supervisors to question their course in public communications. "What is the message?" Supervisor Jay Wickham asked. "Is it the same? Is it stay at home? Because that would be at odds with the governor." He pointed out that following targeted testing drives, 7.4% of people in Dubuque County who were tested for coronavirus had the disease. As of Tuesday, 14% of all Iowans tested had been confirmed positive. "Even in the month of May, it has been usually below 10%, Wickham said. "That appears to be good as far as state and national averages." Dubuque County Public Health Director Patrice Lambert, though, said that success is precarious in a pandemic. "We are happy with that, but, especially now that the state's been opened up, we can only rely on the residents of the county to continue with those mitigation precautions to keep our numbers down for positives," she said. "Maybe our message is not sticking, and we need to gear up again telling people about the social distancing, wearing the masks, and staying at home if you're ill." Supervisor Ann McDonough reported seeing many people out and about over the weekend who had already abandoned many preventative measures. "You're personally responsible. The governor's preached that, and now it's home," she said. "No one's wearing masks. No one's doing nothing. I wonder why we purchased 10,000 masks when we see the results as we walk the street." Baker said a change in message is necessary. "You're not stuck at home. You're safe at home," was a good message at the time, he said. "I think the governor has undermined that. No one wants to stay home now. Now I think we need to focus on making sure that unnecessary trips aren't taking place and people are wearing masks." Board of Health member Diane Pape Freiberger agreed that language needed to change so as not to confuse the community. "They're getting mixed messages from the media, from politicians," she said. This would be the time to do some sort of promotion to inform them. This is not the time to go back, throwing your mask away, or not washing your hands, or social distancing, getting together in large groups. I think we saw a lot of that this weekend, people thinking things were back to normal. Pape Freiberger pitched a more positive approach. When you care for others, you wear the mask, she offered. Out of love for each other and people in the public is the reason to wear the mask. You have to wear a mask is what people are resisting. Board of Health member Susie Stroud recommended the county lead by example. Whatever message we do decide, I think we need to get backing from government employees first, she said. We have to be role models. We can't ask the public to do stuff we are not willing to do. Board Chairman Tom Becken proposed the Board of Health put guidance together to that effect. For example, the public libraries are going to open up here in the next few weeks, he said. Some of the stories are requiring that, if you come into our business, you wear a mask. I don't see why the county can't do the same thing. If you want to come into the library, you wear a mask. If you want to come into the courthouse, you wear a mask. One sticking point, though, was if county department heads would require all of their staff to wear masks, even if they do not regularly interact with the public. Human Resources Administrator Don Sherman said she set up a digital survey to gather elected official and department head opinions, the results of which she plans to present at a meeting today. As a side note in this article, this week's targeted testing. The Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team has begun its second targeted testing drive, growing the groups targeted to include law enforcement. The team had planned on undertaking the latest testing drive last week with 1,000 collection kits from the Iowa Department of Public Health, but navigating the necessary physicians' orders pushed it to this week. The original goal was for local teams to test the staffs of assisted living and residential care facilities and individuals identified through contact tracing. Now, the county has added law enforcement personnel to the list. We worked with the City of Dubuque and Sheriff Joe Kennedy, and I sent out notifications to law enforcement in our county towns as well, said Dubuque County Public Health Director Patrice Lambert. Communicable disease nurses from the Visiting Nurse Association began administering tests Monday morning. Stacy Killian, Executive Director of the VNA, said her nurses also invited certain people who have been working in homeless shelters and food pantries to be tested this week. And finally from the front page, Iowa fish cause Asian invasion. A gift of bluegill caught in Iowa by Chicago's longtime mayor has resulted in decades of ecological damage in Japan, by Benjamin Fisher. This article is accompanied by a large picture of Iowa Department of Natural Resources fisheries biologist Scott Gritters holding a bluegill Tuesday in Bellevue, Iowa. It has been 60 years since several bluegill from waters just north of Gutenberg, Iowa, were taken to Japan, where their offspring became an invasion scourge. In the decades since, the small, innocuous native of North America exploded in population in the freshwater systems of the island nation. The introduction of bluegill led to the near extinction of native species, eventually leading scientific field teams from Japan to head out in search of the fish's source and a possible solution. The story began with a shared interest in ichthyology and a gift between two storied men, legendary Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley and longtime Emperor Akihito of Japan. The latter, in addition to leading his country from 1989 to 2019, is a seasoned student of fish species, penning numerous peer-reviewed papers throughout his adulthood. The former was an avid angler and longtime patron of Chicago's famed Shedd Aquarium. It was there in 1960, during a national tour by then Prince Akihito, that Daley gave the Japanese Royal a collection of 15 bluegill. A photo from the ceremony shows Daly gleefully scooping the fish out of the water with a net. The bluegill is the official state fish of Illinois, after all. There is some question of whether these fish were caught by Daly personally in one of his many reported trips to the area or at his direction. Reports vary. After Akihito returned with the fish to Japan, he decided to eventually introduce their offspring to surface water there. In several public apologies since, the longtime emperor explained that he had hoped the sunfish would prove to be a valuable food source for his people, particularly those living near the country's lakes. The fish then also made its way to Korea. The results in both places were devastating. Over 40 years after this first introduction, L. microchirus now occupies all the freshwater ecosystems of both countries, reads the abstract of a 2006 paper, Origin and Dispersal of Bluegill Sunfish, Lipomus microchirus in Japan and Korea, by Kuichi Kawamura, Ryuji Yonakura, Asuma Katano, Yoshinori Taniguchi, and Kenji Saito. Tracking Origins. In 2002, a plane landed at the airport in Dubuque. A team of Japanese biologists, some of whom later penned the paper above, disembarked and were greeted by Iowa Department of Natural Resources fisheries biologist Scott Gritters. Gritters was to guide the Japanese team to various waterways, then assist them in collecting living specimens. My involvement was getting them different bluegills from different lakes, from different areas, he said. We harvested a lot of genetic material. They could tell which different fish matched those living in Japan. According to the Origin and Dispersal paper, the team analyzed the American fish mitochondrial DNA to trace the origin of the Japanese bluegill's ancestors. Genetic testing and dimorphism studies were conducted on the source fish and compared to the bluegill that had become invasive species in Japan, said Iowa DNR fisheries biologist Karen Osterkamp, who was also involved in aiding the team. The Gutenberg fisheries staff assisted with the collection of bluegill using electrofishing boats on the Mississippi River. Eventually, according to Gritters, the team was able to narrow down the origin of the fish to the Mississippi's Lower Pool 10 and Bussy Lake. The fish's nature. According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service website, bluegill are prolific breeders and opportunistic feeders, both key to their impact as an invasive species. Bluegills are highly adaptive, highly reproductive, Gritters said. The Japanese team took measured gill arches compared to those here. Their body shapes had changed quite a bit when they got to Japan. Another paper from 2006 by the same authors said the bluegill in Japan were even different based on where they were found. Bluegill in different lakes had evolved, in part, due to prey they found there. This widespread explosion in population and competition with local populations led to the near extinction of the rosy bitterling, a popular fish with locals which has close ecological ties with a native freshwater mussel. Multiple requests for comment through university emails by some of the authors of these papers, as well as the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries at the Japanese consulate in Chicago, went unanswered. But work appears to continue, with papers published up until last year. Hard to believe it has been 60 years since the introduction, and it's been almost 20 since the researchers came back to Gutenberg to study them, Osterkamp said. For his help working with the team from Japan, Gritters received a ceremonial sake jug and plenty of stories. And now from the Dubuque and Tri-State page, Dubuque County reports 12 virus cases. One more death brings county's total to 11. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Tuesday's developments included the state of Iowa's dashboard, coronavirus.iowa.gov, is now being updated in real time. The Telegraph Herald will post updates online based on the figures at 11 a.m. and compile figures for online and our print edition based on the 5 p.m. numbers each day. 12 additional cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in Dubuque County as of 5 p.m. compared with Monday evening. The county's total now stands at 288. One additional related death was reported, so the county's total rises to 11. A total of 135 people confirmed to have the coronavirus have recovered, and 3,849 COVID-19 tests have been completed. No additional cases have been reported by the state regarding the outbreak at Dubuque Specialty Care as of 5 p.m. The state's current total for the facility actually continues to lag behind the 49 cases that officials with the nursing home's parent company reported to the Telegraph Herald on Monday. Clayton County had one additional confirmed case and is now at 30 confirmed cases. Jones, Jackson, and Delaware counties had no additional cases. In Iowa, there were 394 additional confirmed cases of COVID-19 reported between 5 p.m. Monday and 5 p.m. Tuesday. The state total now is 15,349. 17 more related deaths were reported. The toll now stands at 372. In Wisconsin, there were 198 new cases reported, pushing the total to 12,885. 8 new deaths were reported, so that total stands at 467 statewide. Grant County reported 3 new cases, bringing its total to 78. In Illinois, the state reported an additional 1,545 cases, along with 145 more related deaths. The state totals now stand at 98,030 cases and 4,379 deaths. The new positive cases include 2 more in Joe Davies County, bringing the total to 22. Also from the Dubuque and Tri-State page, though reopening date unknown, local casinos readying for customers again. Q Casino, Diamond Joe officials say the facilities are taking steps to prepare for a new normal, by Jeff Montgomery. 2 months after they closed the doors, the leaders of Dubuque's 2 casinos are unsure when they will be able to reopen. Even so, officials at both properties started making preparations for when that day finally arrives. Q Casino and Hotel CEO Jesus Avales discussed the current state of affairs Tuesday during the monthly meeting of the Dubuque Racing Association Board of Directors. "We feel that June is a month when we might be able to reopen, and we are doing everything we can to make sure we are ready," he said. The DRA is the nonprofit license holder for both Dubuque casinos. Q and Diamond Joe casinos have been closed since mid-March, and local officials expect them to remain shuttered until at least May 27th, when the current proclamation from Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds is set to expire. Officials at Q Casino emphasized they have taken multiple steps to prepare the facility for a new normal. General Manager Brian Rakestraw said these actions include ordering extra face masks and hand sanitizer, as well as creating floor markings that encourage proper social distancing. However, the officials noted that both the requirements and timetable for reopening are shrouded in uncertainty. "Right now, we are in a waiting game," Rakestraw said. "We are hoping to get at least a week's notice on what the requirements will be." Due to their mandated closures, Iowa's 2 casinos recorded no gaming revenue in April. They collectively generated $10.3 million in April 2019. In some other U.S. markets, casinos are on the verge of reopening. David Strau, a spokesman for Diamond Joe parent company Boyd Gaming, said Boyd-owned casinos in Louisiana and Mississippi are poised to reopen operations this week. We are optimistic that most of our properties will be reopening within the next several weeks, he said. Boyd Gaming has established its own safety protocol, which applies to all properties nationwide, according to Strau. The guidelines include guest health screenings that are conducted on arrival. Masks are required for employees and recommended for visitors. Boyd protocols also call for slots, table games, and restaurant and bar seating to be reconfigured so they adhere to social distancing recommendations. Frequent disinfection of areas ranging from slot machines to ATMs also is mandated. People want to come back and have fun, but they also want to be safe, said Strau. During Tuesday's DRA meeting, DRA board members did not discuss its annual grant program. The board voted last month to postpone awarding the grants, which typically had been announced in May. No timetable has been announced for their distribution this year. In news and brief, Dubuque awarded $100,000 grant towards splash pad expanded courts at City Park. A $100,000 grant will be put toward the installation of a splash pad and the expansion of basketball courts at a Dubuque park. The city on Tuesday announced the grant from the Wellmark Foundation for Comiskey Park. The plan itself for improvements to the park is more than we have the money for, said City Leisure Services Manager Marie Ware. What this does is it allows us to free up money to spend on something else, added elements or enhancements, more amenities. City officials have budgeted about $1.2 million in grant and local funding for improvements to the park at the corner of East 25th and Jackson Streets. The city previously received a $508,000 state grant and purchased an adjacent 2-acre parcel to expand outdoor recreational opportunities in the now nearly 6-acre park. The Wellmark Foundation funding will enhance our efforts to encourage more physical activity in the park and address the most important amenities identified by the community, Ware said in a city press release. The splash pad will provide a water play feature for all ages and a place to cool down in the summer. And the expansion of basketball courts will add capacity to the existing overcrowded courts, according to the release. The timetable for tackling the park project is less certain, given the financial impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, but city officials aim to begin a small part of the overall park redevelopment project yet this year and have the entire project completed by the end of 2021. Grand Opera House to postpone summer lineup. Dubuque's Grand Opera House announced Tuesday that it will postpone the remaining productions of its 2019-2020 season, including Matilda the Musical, Brigadoon, and Disney's Frozen Jr. to the summer of 2021. All three productions will become part of the yet-to-be-announced 2020-2021 season. Additionally, the previously postponed Heartland Ballet production of Coppelia, originally scheduled for performances from March 28th to April 5th, has been canceled. A grand reveal, previously scheduled for May 2nd and 3rd, also has been canceled, but will be replaced with a welcome back celebration as soon as circumstances allow. In a perfect world, we would have announced our 2020-2021 season at a grand reveal on May 2nd, but due to the ongoing health crisis and shifting productions, we are still tinkering with our schedule and rethinking some of the productions we had planned, said Grand Opera House Executive Director Frank McLean in a press release. Additional details regarding the upcoming season, set to begin in the fall, and information for ticket holders for canceled or postponed productions can be found at thegrandoperahouse.com. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Brian P. Carr. Brian Patrick Carr, age 50, of Ames, passed away on Thursday, May 14th, at Israel Family Hospice House in Ames. Due to guidelines for social distancing, a rolling visitation where there are no more than 10 people gathered at any one time will be held from 4 until 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 21st, at Adams Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, May 22nd. Brian Patrick Carr was born on July 10, 1969, to Edward and Jean Dolphin Carr in Dubuque, Iowa. Brian grew up in Cascade, Iowa, where he graduated from Cascade High School in 1987. He continued his education at Iowa State University, where he earned a bachelor's degree. On May 1, 1993, Brian was united in marriage with Christy Rezebeck. After college, Brian and Christy moved around over the following years to Baltimore, Maryland, and Chicago, Illinois. Then, after obtaining scuba dive master certifications and researching living in places like Belize and Puerto Rico, they decided to move to Hawaii on a life adventure before ultimately moving back to Iowa to settle down and raise a family. The couple had three daughters, Katie, Allie, and Emily. Brian's girls were his passion. He loved them with his whole heart. He even made an original cheer for one of his daughters. The special cheer went, "Bula Bula, you da man." On occasion, at Ames High events, you may have heard him say this among many other cheers that came from Brian. That was only one piece of evidence that Brian was super supportive and wanted to be there for his family, even when he was sick. He always wanted his girls to know he was proud of them and he was so strong for them to the end. He was also a dependable friend and neighbor, willing to lend a hand whenever and however needed. Brian loved being the handyman of the family, learning from others and referencing YouTube videos whenever necessary. He always had household projects going on to make his family home better, willing to tackle any project. He loved to garden and spent years figuring out what works and what doesn't, eventually designing garden bins in an effort to make the garden more bunny-proof, only to lose the battle when a family of bunnies made the bins their home under one of his tomato plants. Brian used the skills he knew and learned to teach his wife and daughters how to do things for themselves for when he was no longer around. He taught them how to work through plumbing issues, how wiring worked, car maintenance, airing up tires, fixing internet connections and computer issues, even though they frustrated Brian at times too. When any of his computers or printers permanently broke down, he enjoyed taking them apart to show his girls how they worked. Brian had an entrepreneurial mind. When he was not working or being the family handyman, he would come up with new business ideas. The ideas always started out, "I've got a new business idea. What do you think about this?" usually involving a restaurant. Brian enjoyed reading and listening to a good audiobook while driving to work, and he had the best recommendations for fantasy books. He was a fan of Star Wars, Ender's Game, and the Tolkien series. He also enjoyed wrestling, as that was his passion during his high school years, playing games with friends, hunting mushrooms, even if he had no interest in eating them. He just loved spending time outdoors, studying maps and geography, and jamming out to a good Bruno Mars song. He had been an avid Iowa State football and basketball fan since his college years. During Brian's battle with cancer over the last year, he picked up praying the rosary religiously for a miracle cure for his family and friends, the family pets Izzy and Willow, and ending by including everyone in the whole wide world. It was special to him to use the rosary that was passed down to him from his great Aunt Evelyn. He kept his spirits high to the end with the usual silliness, like sporting his "Kiss Me, I'm Irish" t-shirt, showing off his pride to have Irish heritage. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Adam's Funeral Home, and online condolences may be left to Brian's family at www.adamssoderstrom.com. That's AdamsSoderstrom.com. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to the family to be set aside for his three daughters. Keith R. Kisher. Keith Raymond Kisher of Platteville died unexpectedly but peacefully in the early hours of May 16th at home. A celebration of his life will be held at a future date to be determined. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Keith Kisher Memorial Fund, P.O. Box 771, Platteville, Wisconsin 53818. Donations will support macular degeneration research. Keith was born July 23, 1938, in Newell, Iowa, to Ethelyn Wilson and Raymond Kisher. He served as a paratrooper and Signal Corps trainer in the U.S. Army from 1955 to 1957. He was stationed in Germany, where he fell in love at first sight with Josephine Heinrich of Munich, Germany, whom he married in 1959 in Emmitsburg, Iowa. Keith had a successful 26-year career with Combined Insurance Company, followed by a number of entrepreneurial endeavors and community involvement. Keith enjoyed many hobbies and was a faithful Christian, a kind and loving spouse, parent, grandparent, and friend. Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville, Wisconsin, is assisting the family. Full obituary can be read at www.melbyfh.com. Eric Peterson Brandt. Eric Peterson Brandt, 56, of Dubuque, died at home on the afternoon of Friday, May 15th. An avid cyclist, talented artist, ultimate wanderer, organic gardener, jack of all trades, and innate philosopher, Eric embraced life and all that it had to offer. Each new day and through every struggle, he took on the world with a positive DFA attitude, an example of living that had an immeasurable impact on those in his life. He passed at home in the arms of his love on the most beautiful of days, with the warm sun and the sounds of dozens of songbirds streaming in through the windows. Eric was born August 18, 1963, in Lincoln, Nebraska, son of Dean and Marie Bolin Peterson. He graduated from Lincoln East in 1981, the University of Nebraska-Lincoln 1994, and soaked up knowledge continually throughout his entire life. On August 23, 2014, he married Jenny Brandt at Eagle Point Park, Dubuque, followed by a celebration of love, live music, and fireworks in Keeler, Wisconsin. Eric passed due to complications from his three-year battle with inoperable lung cancer. Early on in facing the disease, he wrote words to share with all of those he loved and all that loved him if he should lose the fight. I love all of you dearly. It is unfortunate that we were unable to stop this disease, which must be the case if you are hearing this, but each of us will one day face death on our own. Do not fear death. It is as natural as life itself, and it is our culture that makes us think the sun is going down rather than our spot on the earth just spinning away for a few hours. Face the unknown and all things with love and compassion, fearlessly with courage in your heart. Tread lightly on the earth. Treat each other and all creatures well. Contemplate the wonder of nature and cherish the fragility of the moment. Try to see yourself in the other person and imagine their perspective, and leave some of the mysterious uninvestigated with a sense of wonder and quiet humility. Help each other and the small and weak freely without desire for recognition. Be kind to one another. Don't be surprised if you think you recognize my glance from the eyes of a small bird. Peace. The Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family. A celebration of Eric's life and magical unicorn spirit will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be sent to the Magical Unicorn Memorial Fund, care of Premier Bank, 2625 Northwest Arterial, Dubuque, Iowa, 52002. Funds will be used to support causes Eric championed that help kids gain better access to making music, creating art, and riding bikes. Constance M. Manders. Constance M. Connie Manders, 81, of Bernard, Iowa, passed away peacefully surrounded by her family and friends on Friday, May 15th, at her home in Bernard, Iowa. Memorial service and mass for Connie will be held at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Gary Owen, Iowa, at a later date. Burial will be held in Sacred Heart Cemetery in Fillmore, Iowa, at a later date. Reef Funeral Home in Cascade, Iowa, is assisting the family with arrangements. Anyone interested in sending memorials may send them to Reef Funeral Home, Attention Constance Manders Family, P.O. 430, Cascade, Iowa, 52033. Connie was born December 18, 1938, in Dubuque, Iowa, daughter of William A. and Calista Clocker Knepper. She was a graduate of St. Patrick's High School in Gary Owen, Iowa. On March 23, 1957, she was united in marriage to George Manders at St. Raphael Cathedral in Dubuque, Iowa. She was an avid Iowa Hawkeyes fan and loved watching all their games. She adored her time with her family and friends. Her door was always open for family and friends to come and stay as long as they would like. She truly enjoyed hosting holiday get-togethers at her house and playing cards and other games. She had the patience of a monk and worked as hard as a farmer. She worked at Trappist Caskets for 18 years until her retirement. Connie was a member of St. Patrick's Parish in Gary Owen, Iowa. Connie's family would like to extend a heartfelt thank you to the doctors, nurses, and caretakers for their extraordinary efforts and kind, compassionate treatment of Connie. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.reeffuneralhomeinc.com. Ronald M. Welp. Ronald M. Ernie Welp, 60, of East Dubuque, died Friday, May 15th, at home from natural causes. A public visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. on Thursday, May 21st, at Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the strict guidelines issued by the CDC and state will be followed, and only 10 people will be allowed in the funeral home at any one time. Ernie was born on April 4, 1960, in Dubuque, the son of Norman F. and Jacqueline Hodgson Welp. He was a graduate of East Dubuque High School. Ernie was formerly employed at Chicago Dubuque Foundry in East Dubuque and Morrison Brothers Company in Dubuque for over 30 years. He played bass and was a vocalist in many bands. Ernie loved motorcycling and paragliding. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhed.com. Elizabeth R. Dent. Elizabeth Betty R. Dent, 88, of Cuba City, passed away on Thursday, May 14th, at Ingleside Community Nursing Home in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Due to this unknown time of COVID-19, a public memorial service will be held at a later date. A private family graveside service will be held at St. Rose Cemetery in Cuba City, with Father David Flanagan officiating. Haudenschild Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City is serving the family. Betty was born on June 28, 1931, to Arthur and Emmeline Keeler Schroeder in Keeler, Wisconsin. She attended St. Joseph's Academy in Dubuque and University of Wisconsin-Platteville. She married Thomas Jim J. Dent on August 24, 1949, in Keeler, Wisconsin. She worked as a teletype operator at J.C. Penney's in Dubuque. She was a member of the St. Rose Catholic Church in Cuba City, Wisconsin. Betty was an avid reader. She loved music and dancing. Sewing, she had sewn all of her clothing and her daughter's prom and homecoming dresses, and she enjoyed spending time with her family and friends. In lieu of plants and flowers, an Elizabeth Betty R. Dent Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be mailed to Houdenscheid Funeral Home, care of Betty Dent Family, Box 825, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.houdenscheidfuneralhome.com. Lily Ann B. Shulman. Lily Ann B. Shulman, 86, of North Lakeshore Drive, Chicago, Illinois, passed away Sunday, May 17th, at her home in Illinois. Private family services will be held at Reef Funeral Home in Farley, Iowa. Graveside services for Lily Ann will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, May 20th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery in Farley, Iowa, with Alan Garfield presiding. She was born April 8, 1934, in Alexandria, Egypt, daughter of Isaac and Yelena Goldbart Behar. She received her secondary education in Egypt, attended high school in London, England, and was a graduate of the University of Chicago with a foreign language specialist degree. She was employed at United Airlines in the red carpet room. She was a renowned world traveler who visited every continent on Earth. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.reeffuneralhomeinc.com. Joan C. Hamilton. Joan Claire Hamilton, 90, of Epworth, died May 18th. Because of the unprecedented conditions in our country right now due to the COVID-19 virus, a private family memorial service will be held for Joan on May 22nd at Reef Funeral Home in Epworth, Iowa. Public burial for Joan will be held at 11 a.m. May 22nd at St. Patrick's Catholic Cemetery in Epworth, with Reverend Michael Schuler presiding. Alan J. Fitzgibbons. Alan Joseph Fitzgibbons, 88, of Dubuque, passed away at Dubuque Specialty Care on May 16th. Graveside services will be held at a later date. Memorials and cards of sympathy may be mailed to Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, Dubuque, Iowa, 52003. Online condolences may be left at www.leonardfuneralhome.com. Alan was the son of George and Leona Kiefer Fitzgibbons and was born in Dubuque on February 19, 1932. He attended St. Columbkill School, graduating in 1950. He married Neldia Udele on May 9, 1965 in Dubuque. Alan was employed at John Deere Dubuque Works until his retirement in 1985. He was a member of the National Guard, local UAW, and numerous billiards leagues. He competed on the national level and was said to be the best billiards player around. Alan was one of the nicest people you could ever meet. He was always kind and had a great sense of humor. A special thank you to Dubuque Specialty Care, especially Sandra Koch and Hospice of Dubuque. Senior Consilia Schoenher, OSF. Senior Consilia Schoenher, OSF, age 99, died Monday, May 18th, at Mount St. Francis Center. Following Archdiocesan directives, a private committal service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Thursday, May 21st. A memorial mass will be scheduled for a later date. And from the sports page, under girls' prep basketball, building up a winner. Townsend steps away after 13 league titles in 31 seasons, by Steve Ortman. This article is accompanied by a picture of River Ridge, Wisconsin girls basketball coach Karen Townsend celebrating her 500th career win on December 20th, 2018. Over the course of 31 seasons, Karen Townsend set out to build a winning tradition with the River Ridge, Wisconsin girls basketball program. It's possible she exceeded even her own high expectations. After starting at Bloomington High School in 1989, before becoming River Ridge coach in 1995, the one constant with the girls' basketball team through 31 seasons under Townsend was winning. She resigned from her post last week to enjoy more free time, but Townsend will remain at River Ridge as the school's counselor. "It's been on my mind for a while," said Townsend, an Ohio, Illinois native who played guard at University of Wisconsin-Platteville and finished her master's degree with the Pioneers in 1989. She was also a graduate assistant with the women's basketball team for two seasons before taking over the head position in Bloomington. "When you've been doing it for a long time, you kind of look forward to a slower life and more relaxed life. It just seemed like the timing was right. I've spent many years dedicated to this and just thought it was time." Few can boast the type of success Townsend had leading the Timberwolves, finishing with a 537-195 career record for an impressive 73% winning percentage. She led Bloomington River Ridge to 13 conference championships, an amazing 12 regional titles, and two sectional crowns that led to a state semifinal appearance in 1993 and a state runner-up trophy in 2011. "It was all about building a winning tradition, and I had the opportunity to do that with the longevity that a lot of coaches these days aren't getting," Townsend said. "I was 23 when I started, a young coach that was inexperienced, and the administration at Bloomington and River Ridge allowed me to make mistakes and grow. When you're allowed to build that longevity, you can build a program and a tradition, and I'm very thankful for that." Townsend was selected as her conference's Coach of the Year on 12 occasions and was the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association Coach of the Year in 2011. She received the prestigious honor of being inducted into the WBCA Hall of Fame in 2018. To be honored from the Coaches Association and be named alongside some pretty successful coaches was quite the honor, Townsend said. "To be named into that Hall of Fame is pretty special, the highlight of a coaching career. It was such an honor." Townsend has served as the president of the WBCA and has held other roles within the organization. She is annually seen as a television color commentator for the WIAA Girls State Tournament for the past 25 years, which will now come to an end as only active coaches fill that role. "Over my tenure as athletic director and before, Coach Townsend has been a standard in coaching," River Ridge Athletic Director Wade Winkers said in a press release. "The program she has built is incredible, and her impact is found in countless former student athletes." After more than three decades on the bench, Townsend certainly deserves a lighter schedule. She'll leave behind quite a legacy. "Surround yourself with good people," Townsend said. "I had a very loyal assistant, Joe Schulte, for many years building this program, and it was a great partnership. Start at the youth level and build it. Work your way up. Get the kids to become dedicated and build the program. I will miss the girls, and I'll miss the competitiveness. It's been a big part of my life for a long time, and I'm excited for a new chapter, but it's definitely been a great ride and very rewarding. With all the young women that have come through our program, I'm quite proud of what they've become." And from Sports in Brief, under football, Brady gathers new teammates for workout, Dateline Tampa, Florida. Tom Brady isn't letting the coronavirus pandemic or NFL rules against players working out at team facilities keep him from preparing for a new season with his new Tampa Bay team. Brady gathered some of his Buccaneers teammates on a high school field early Tuesday for a throwing session. Brady wore a Buccaneers helmet and an orange jersey over his shoulder pads. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thanks for listening, and be safe.